Well, Jonah, we've been going through this topic of sin, and it's a big word, and it's a hard word to really define and get your head around. And hopefully what you've seen the last couple weeks and or what we'll see over the next few weeks is that sin is complex. It's nuanced. It's not something that is easily boiled down to one sentence. And most importantly, sin is often what we don't think it is. It's deceptive. It's surprising. It creeps in. It often even starts with the good things in our lives that can become the ultimate things that take over. A couple weeks ago, we looked at Cain and Abel in this story. What started out probably when they were younger as simple sibling rivalry turns into cold-blooded murder. And then we looked last week at the people of God, and you know, all they said, they were wandering in the desert, and they were just tired of the stinking manna. They were bored of eating this bread. And they said, all we want is meat. Nothing's really bad with meat. Meat's good. But the sin beneath that was the condition they placed on God. They said, if only we had meat, then we'd be fine. And that's this insidious nature of sin. It creeps in. And I've been saying over the last few weeks that some people have a hard time with that word sin, whether it exists or what it is, and how do you even get your head around it. But here's the thing. Fundamentally, deep down inside, we all know. Fundamentally, we know there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong out there. There's something wrong in here. There's something wrong with the world. You see it. Poverty and suffering and hurt and loss and tragedy. You see this and you know there's something amiss. There's something that's not right with us. And the Bible has a simple answer for it. Rather, it seems simple at the surface. They call it sin. Brokenness. Something's wrong with us. There's this great line, that movie came out last year, Steve Jobs. There's a lot of great lines in it, but you remember the one part, Steve Jobs, known for making these things that we love, these devices that some of you love them, some of you are not Apple people, I got it. Some of you are a little not Apple snobs or whatever, but everybody loves these devices, and he's bent on making these beautiful creations, and yet, throughout the whole story, he has this fractured, almost non-existent relationship with his daughter, Lisa. And there comes the climax towards the end of the movie where Lisa just has out at him and just screams at him in front of everybody. And she goes up to the rooftop and he follows her out there. And he says, you know, he stops her and he named this thing, software system back in the day, Lisa. And she thought forever that it was after her own name. And he says, no, it was after, it's called locally integrated system architecture. And she's crushed by this. And then at the end of the movie, he says, no, Lisa, it was after your name after all. And she looks at him and she says, why couldn't you just say that all along? And he's got one of these great lines. He looks at her and he says, because I'm poorly made. He's a jerk, in the movie at least, to everybody. And his whole life is bent on making things that people love. And yet he says at the end, I can't even have a relationship with you. Why? Because I'm poorly made. And if we're honest with ourselves today, we know that there's something in us that is poorly made. And some of you feel highly defective at various times in your life. That's sin. And it's creepy, and it's quiet, and it's hard to put your finger on sometimes. And here we get to the story of Jonah. Okay, Jonah. And if you know the story of Jonah, you know, you typically when you read the book of Jonah, it's four chapters, you always hear most of the time, at least I have, Jonah preached chapter one and chapter two. Remember the big fish? Everybody loves the story of the fish. And the narrative usually goes something like this, and my five-year-old daughter loves it. She told me about it this week. Jonah and the fish. Always obey God. Don't run away from him. If you run away from him, a fish is going to eat you. And you have to obey him and pray to him, and then he'll spit you out of the fish and then go on your merry way. But what people tend to miss is the end of the story. The real condition of Jonah's heart. The sin of the self. When Jonah sits outside the city of Nineveh, and he looks at that place and he's stinking, piping, hot, mad. He's a mess. Why? Because he has started to worship something other than God. And he feels, and he doesn't understand, he feels that he's entitled to God's love and nobody else. Not especially not that dirty, pagan, sinful place. Not the big city of Nineveh. Not the capital of Assyria that was known for violence and destroying people. And Jonah's people hated the Ninevites, and the Ninevites hated Jonah's people. Jonah looks at that city and he says, God, how dare you? And he doesn't understand grace. Because the sin of self has taken him over. See, most of the time we concentrate on that story. And the moral, the lesson goes something like that. It just says something like, you know, when God tells you to do something, go do it. And if you disobey him, that's the big sin. No, not really. But look, because in the fish, Jonah prays to God. And in the fish, Jonah says, I know you're gracious. And in the fish, he says, salvation utterly comes from you. And not two chapters later, he forgets the whole point. And he says, I'd like to die. Because he doesn't want the Ninevites to get what he has. He doesn't think that those dirty, rotten sinners should get the grace and the love and the mercy that he's been shown. Because he doesn't know the grace and the mercy and the depths to which he's been shown in the first place. So let's look at this together. First, I call it the self-centered sin and then the selfless answer to that. What's the real sin here? What's going on in Jonah's heart? And therefore, what goes on in your and my heart? Because you and me have a bit of Jonah, or maybe even a lot of Jonah in all of us. You and I are bound to get up outside the city and turn around and look at other people and say, destroy them, God. They deserve it. They don't deserve to be blessed. They don't deserve to prosper. And you can start to imagine some people in your life that you probably wagged your finger at like that. It happens. There's a little bit of Jonah in all of us. How are we going to root it out? Here first. What is Jonah's primary sin? God comes to him in verse 4 and 9, and God repeats himself. And whenever God repeats himself, you might want to pay attention to what God's saying. Two times God comes to him and says, is it okay that you're angry? Why are you so angry, Jonah? Is it right for you to be angry? And Jonah says two times, yes, I am. I have every right to be angry. Now, let me pause for a second here. Anger in and of itself is not the sin. Let me say that again. And it may rub some people the wrong way. Anger in and of itself is not the sin. We have examples, of course, in Matthew 21 where Jesus himself gets angry. We call that righteous anger. So it's not that Jonah is just angry. It's the object of his anger. And I'll even go so far as to say this. When Jonah says, kill me, Lord, I want to die, that's not his sin either. Because there's times in your life where you go through the depression and you want to die and you feel that way. That's not the inherent sin. Look at the book of Job. Job says here in chapter 30, and now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have taken hold of me. The night racks my bones and the pain that gnaws me takes no rest. Job says, I want to die. Now listen, though. That's not the point that God takes with Jonah, not his anger and not even his depression, but he takes his self-righteousness as the sin. He says, is it right for you to be angry? And in this case, if you look at the story, Jonah, his anger, it's rather inordinate. He says, oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was yet in my country? That's why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you're a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. Pause. Jonah is a good little Christian. He's got all the doctrine correct. He believes in God. He says it out of his own mouth when he's in the fish and then when he's out. He says, God, I knew it all along. I knew you were gracious. I knew you said steadfast love. Just don't give it to them. They don't deserve it. First, God says, you don't have love for this city. God takes aim with him and he says, why don't you have love for the city? You have love for a plant. You have pity on a plant, but you don't have pity for this city. They don't know their right hand from their left. They're lost. They're blind. And you don't have pity for them, but yet you have pity for a plant, God says. He says, you don't love the city. And that is wrong. God is lovingly, he's grieving for this city is the word in the end. He says, when they would say the word pity in your translation, it's a Hebrew word means to mourn. And God in essence is saying, Jonah, you're mourning over a little plant that withered and died. I'm mourning over all them that will wither and die. Jonah hated the pagans. He hated the city. And he didn't want God to give them anything that he had. You see what's happening here? What's the sin? Is Jonah out? Remember we said, is Jonah out in the red light district right now? No. Is Jonah out doing, you know, the stuff that you and I know he shouldn't do and we don't really talk about? We just kind of whisper. Is Jonah out there doing, you know, hey, did you hear about Jonah? Did you hear what he did last night? Bad, it was bad. No. He's sitting with his own mouth and he's acknowledging the graciousness of God. Yet he's not willing to extend that graciousness to his enemies. He's self-righteous. He's justifying himself. He's looking at all the people who hate him and his people, and he says, wipe them out. And if we're honest, I know you can think of a few people in your life that you've probably thought about that or said that to. God, they don't deserve it. God, get rid of them. They annoy me. They grate on me. They rub me the wrong way. They drain me. You've had probably even people who've come out to attack you. And you say, you in essence say, yeah, I'll pray for you. Yeah, right. I and you, like Jonah, will go out and climb that hill and look down at the city and say, get rid of them. And when God doesn't get rid of him, and when God shows mercy, do you know the sin? Do you see this now? Jonah, the condition of his heart. When God relents and shows mercy, Jonah's not happy. He's pissed off. Why? Because he never knew the grace of God to begin with. All along, Jonah is justifying himself. Jonah says, look, I knew that was going to happen. That's why I didn't want to go talk to them, God. He's time and time again justifying himself. He's not resting in grace for everyone. He's finding contentment in grace and justification for himself. Listen, what's Jonah's sin? It's his self-righteousness. It's his snobbery, you may say, but it's a religious snobbery. And it's rampant through the church. Do you see the insidiousness of sin now? It's not necessarily all the immoral deeds, although those are sin. This is what makes Christianity vastly different than almost every other worldview or faith religion that you can bring up. Because Christianity will say this. A Christian says, not only do I repent of my evil deeds and the bad things I've done in my life, but I also need to repent of the good things I've done in my life. Because more often than not, the good things that we do in our life are tainted with selfishness. They're tainted with self-righteousness. They're tainted with the need for us to justify ourselves. Look at me. I'm not them. Yeah, I'm not perfect. But I'm not them. Jonah says, God, you are gracious, and I'm a follower of you, but don't let them in. They don't deserve it. I do, Jonah says, in essence. He's justifying himself. You remember that line in The Chariots of Fire where Harold Abrams, you know, Eric Liddell's one runner and Harold's the other runner. And Eric Liddell says, you know, one, God made me one thing. He made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. And Harold Abrams got this one line. He says, will I race? And he says, I will. I will raise my eyes and look down that corridor, 4 feet wide, with 10 lonely seconds to justify my whole existence. The whole reason why he ran was not for the joy of running. It was the 10 lonely seconds, he says, in the sprint when he can justify his whole existence. And if you don't like Harold Abrams and Chariots of Fire is not your bag, take it from the great philosopher Rocky. You remember Rocky? He's going back and forth with Adrian. Remember this? And he says, you know, he says, she says, you can't win this fight. The first time he's going to fight Apollo Creed. And nobody's ever gone the distance with Apollo. And here's little Rocky from Philadelphia. Little bum of a guy. A nobody. A nothing. No name. No value. And he looks at Adrian and says, you know, because I was thinking, it don't really matter if I lose this fight. It really don't matter if this guy opens up my head either. Because all I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed. And if I can go that distance, you see, and that bell rings and I'm still standing, I'm going to know for the first time in my life, see, that I weren't just another bum from the neighborhood. And yes, that is bad English. It's Rocky. He says, if I can just go the distance, I'll know. I'll know then that I wasn't just a bum. Harold Abrams says, I have 10 seconds to justify my entire existence. Jonah climbs that hill and he says, I'm right. They're wrong. Destroy them. Save me. And in essence, what he's saying is, God, I've earned it. They haven't. He's taking the ultimate spiritual selfie. He's on that hillside, and all he can focus on is himself. And he looks at the people who are his enemies, and he looks at the people who've wronged him in his life, and he says, wipe them out. They don't deserve it. I do. What's his sin? His sin is religion. His sin is the idea that he has done everything right. He's a person of God. He even says, God, you're gracious. Just don't be that gracious to them. God, you're merciful. Just don't be that merciful to them. They're the evil ones. I'm not. They're bad. I'm good. His religion has become his justification. It's become the 10 seconds in which he justifies his whole existence. And you know this because when it's taken from him, you know this, that when mercy is shown to the enemies, he loses his mind. Think about it. In your life, the enemies of your life, and we've got them, let's be honest. It's church. We could be honest. There's enemies. There's people. There's Ninevites in your life. Or there are and there have been. If there aren't, just wait. There will be. There will be the Ninevites who come up against you in your life, and you're bound and prone to say, God, I don't deserve it. Get rid of them. Hurt them. Make them suffer. Make them lose. Justify me to prove to everybody that I'm right and they're wrong. Zero-sum game. That's not grace. That's religion. That says you have what you've had because you've earned it. And you'll do anything, and I will do anything to prove and go the distance to prove that we're not just some bum. We need something to justify us. We need something to tell us that we're important, that we mean something. For Jonah, it was his faith. It was his religion. It was his standing as a person of God. Isn't that ironic? The very thing that he was using to justify himself was the very thing he was using to condemn the people he just didn't like. Jonah says, get rid of them. They don't deserve it. This is why I didn't want to do this in the first place, God. I told you so. And here, let me push this a little further. Before I go on to the answer, before I close this, look at the trap of self-righteousness. Look what it does. Jonah, in chapter 2, in the fish, gets it. He's what we would call a good Christian boy. He says in chapter 2, salvation, he says, Jonah chapter 2, but I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. He gets it. Check the box, Jonah. Good. And in two chapters, he is a hot, stinking mess of anger and revenge. Here's why the sin of self-righteousness is so evil. And this is why the gospel, the message of the gospel, is something you and I need to preach to ourselves every single day. And let me push this out. Some of you heard me say this. The gospel, the message, when you say, Jesus Christ died for me, to save me by grace alone, nothing I did to deserve it. When you say that, it's not just the entrance into the club. You don't go check that box, I move on. Why? Because the human heart's going to forget that message. Jonah forgets it. We forget it. And tomorrow you'll wake up and you'll find a new Nineveh. You'll find new people to go out and try to wreck and say, God, get rid of them. Wipe them off the face of the earth. Jonah, he understands the gospel in chapter 2. By chapter 4, he's forgotten it again. This is why at Soul Grace, we just believe that you don't just, the gospel is not just the ticket into heaven. It's not the ABCs of faith. It's not the beginning point of faith. It's the A to Z. It's everything. And you and I will continually have to preach it back to our hearts. You and I will continually have to come back and say, we are no better than Jonah. We climb the hill east of the city and we look down on others, do we not? We find all the people in our life who don't deserve grace and mercy, but we do, right? Let's be honest. We're no better than Jonah, and Jonah's sin is the sin of self. He says, look, God, I've earned this. They haven't. And God, in one of the greatest displays of grace and mercy, is going to rock his world. The sin of Jonah is the sin of self, but what's the answer? Well, God gives it to him. And it's this whole little weird story of this plant. And he gives this story and says, you know, God says in verse 6, now the Lord God appointed a plant and made it to come up over Jonah so that it might be a shade over his head to save him from his discomfort. So Jonah was exceedingly glad because of the plant. And then he says he sends a worm to attack it. And the next word he says, God says, why? He says, you have pity for a plant. And that word, like I said, pity, means to mourn. It means to grieve over the loss of something that is so near to your heart. A plant. Are you kidding me? It's not that Jonah was just some tree hugger or a green freak. It wasn't that he was just in love with the plant. God says, look, don't you see? You did nothing to get this plant, and yet it was given to you, and you attached your heart to it, and when it went away, you become bitter and angry. Folks, this is when you know you're not a Christian. This is when you know you're a religious person, but not a Christian saved by grace alone. It's because when your religion gets challenged, you become bitter. When your expectations of God don't get met, you become angry. Why me, Lord? I deserve, Lord. I know I've said that sentence many times in my life. That's what Jonah and this whole thing, this whole business of the plant's about. It's his sense of entitlement. Jonah feels he's earned the plant. And God looks at him and says, you silly little boy. You did nothing for that plant. Yet you feel you own it. You have pity for it as if it was a lost loved one. Why? You didn't grow it. It has nothing to do with you, Jonah. What he's doing with his hot east wind, by the way, is he's blowing down Jonah's sense of entitlement. He's in essence shaking Jonah to say, you didn't earn this. Don't you see? I'm compassionate, God would say, to whom I'm compassionate towards, not to who you think I should be compassionate towards. And the coolest thing is that Jonah, that God, he comes and he does this plant thing and he says, Jonah, get rid of your sense of entitlement. You didn't earn this. Let's not joke around anymore. And Jonah, for his sin, deserved death. God had every right to come down to him and say, Jonah, you stupid little runt of a man. I put you in the fish and you still don't get it. Now I smite thee. Right? That's the Old Testament God, isn't it? That's the one I heard from Sunday school, right? Don't anger the Old Testament God. He's wrathful and he's vengeful and he's angry. What did he do to Jonah? He comes and he asks him some questions. He says, Jonah, why are you so mad, man? And he asks him again, Jonah, why are you so angry? He's soft and he's tender. Yes, he will destroy the vines in our lives, and he'll need to destroy your vines, your sense of entitlement, your sense of self-worth, whatever that 10 seconds is that you use to justify your existence. He will have to destroy it with the hot east wind. But at the end of the day, to Jonah he comes and he says, stop thinking you've earned it. You haven't. Jonah was the ultimate Pharisee. See, in the New Testament, we had a word for these people. Pharisees, you know these guys. Some of you know them. These Pharisee guys, they were the good religious people of the day. They were the good churchgoers. They knew their Bible. They did their prayers. They went to church. They were righteous and morally correct. And yet, they felt they earned God's love by that way. And Jesus comes to the Pharisees and says, no, 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 no. And God comes to Jonah in essence and says, no, 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 Jonah. Stop thinking you've earned it. Ninevites didn't earn it. You didn't earn it. It's grace and grace for all. Get rid of the Pharisee in your heart, he would say. And God, he says, Jonah, you mourned over the plant. I mourn, God says, over that evil city of Nineveh. Do you see this? God, in essence, weeps over the city. He weeps over the people, he says, they don't know their right hand from their left. He weeps over the people who says, I don't know where my life is going. I don't know what the meaning of life even is. I'm lost. And God says, those are the people I weep over, not Jonahs and the Pharisees of the world who judge them. I weep over the lost. But there was another one who came along and he weeps over a city much later. There's this cool line in Matthew chapter 23 where Jesus turns around to the crowd and he says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as hens gather her brood under her wings, yet you are not willing. Jesus weeps over the city. Jonah judges over the city. And there's a couple of times a little bit later where Jesus is talking to Pharisees who are just like Jonah and just like you and just like me. All the people who felt they've earned it. They've gotten God's love. They're entitled to it. They've got that vine and they say, it's mine. This is mine. Look. And Jesus looks at the Pharisees and he says, they look at him and they say, teacher, we wish to see a sign from you. But he answered, an evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of who? The prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And this is the important part. Pay attention. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and behold, something greater than Jonah is here. Do you realize how scandalous this is? Jesus is in essence saying, the people of Nineveh, those dirty sinners, get grace more than you and I tend to. He says, the people of Nineveh will rise up and they'll judge the Pharisees. And the people who heard the story, they knew their good Bible stories. They knew Nineveh. They knew how evil it was. They knew how violent it was. And God says, but they hear my word and they repent. What do you do with my word? Do you feel you've earned my love? Or do you feel that I freely give it to you and all the people you despise and all the people who despise you? This is one of the hardest things for us to put our teeth into, one of the hardest things for our hearts to accept, is it not? You look around your office, you look around your classroom, and you see those Ninevites, do you not? You look around and you see the people who don't deserve to be forgiven. They've messed up too much, and God says, no. No. Jonah goes outside the city, climbs the hill, looks down on the city, literally, and judges it. One greater than Jonah came, and he went outside the city, and he went up on a hill, not to judge the city, to forgive them. Jonah went outside the city, looked at them, and says, kill me. Jesus goes outside the city, and he says, kill me, not them. You see, folks, the sin of self says, I've earned it. I'm not a bum. I can justify myself. It's my plant. It's my vine. And God will come in. He will have to. He'll have to destroy that vine. But he looks at Jonah with such grace and such compassion. He says, Jonah, you care about this stupid plant. I care about all of them that you rub and stick up your nose at. See, God's compassion is not as narrow as ours. Let me close by saying this. The Ninevites, this city of Nineveh, if you go back in your history books, and I won't bore you in the next couple minutes with it, go back. They are some really evil people. They've done a lot of mean, nasty, atrocious things in the world, especially to Jonah's people. They're evil. They're violent. And by all accounts, God should have said to them, Ninevites, come and grovel, beg, bow, plead. And he doesn't. What does he do? He relents. He holds back. He shows compassionate to the uncompassionate. And you and I, that's a great story, the story of Nineveh and Jonah, but we have one, Jesus says, one greater than Jonah. It's him. Jesus is the ultimate example that God looks at you and me and says, he doesn't say grovel, come, beg, crawl on the ground, you worthless little being. He says, no, my son went outside the city to die for you. Get rid of your vines. Get rid of your entitlement. As I close, let me ask you this. That's the gospel. And Jonah, he understood it. Then he forgot it. And God had to remind him of it, just like he's got to do for you and me. Now, if you take that message of the gospel, how then does it change your attitude towards those in your life? The Nineveh, the evil city. When the going gets tough in your life, in this city, the city of Seoul, do you get running like Jonah? The whole moral of the story is not simply just to trust and obey in God. That's religion. And Jonah thinks, because he's obeyed God, that he's earned it. And God says, no, the Ninevites, they repented. They know my grace better than you. And if you and I start to take that attitude out into the city, it should and it will change the way we look at the city. This is why Dennis sang that song earlier. You're the God of the city and there's greater things to come. We can't judge this place. We can have compassion on it because we know we were shown compassion first. The one greater than Jonah comes. He destroys the vines of entitlement in our lives by going to the cross. He says, you didn't earn this. Stop trying to justify yourself. Come to the cross. Come to compassion for everyone who will have it. Go now in prayer to God. Take a moment. Think about this story of Jonah and what it means for you and me and the Ninevehs of our life before we close with our final song.